Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster of National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, I know you've been looking forward to the primary season, but what you've really been looking forward to is the President's State of the Union speech, because I'm sure you're confident they'll have a whole bunch of new ideas that don't pit one group of people against another.
Well, when has a speech not worked for President Obama?
He's always one speech away, so apparently this is the one. We'll get a little bit more to the division in just a moment. But, you know, the Republicans, they'll get their rebuttal. Mitch Daniels will have, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes after everybody's cleared out of the House chamber tonight. But it's not the same. And so the RNC, not willing to just take those few minutes, has a little bit of a pre-buttal, this 30-second web ad from the RNC, which surprisingly features a former Democratic president.
If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term opposition.
Here we are 4 years later, and they can't find a job. Why should they support him?
We're living in an economy with 13 million people out of work, with 4 million people out of work for more than a year.
49 million Americans living below the poverty line.
Undue influence by Obama campaign supporters.
Things are not going in the right direction. They're going in the wrong direction.
Well, I don't think they're better off than they were 4 years ago.
One of the things that they referred to in there with the campaign donors was Solyndra, but that was just a visual. So just to give you the full picture there, Dan, I'm not sure that they're going to convince a ton of people with Bill Clinton clips that it's time for Obama to go. But Obama's own pronouncement 3 years ago that if he's not got this thing turned around in 3 years, I think can potentially work well against him. And of course, unfortunately for the country, but fortunately for conservatives and whoever the Republican nominee is, the record is abysmal. Good job by the RNC to point that out.
Yeah, two things here. One thing that terrified me about Obama saying that, if things aren't turned around in 3 years, this is going to be a one-term proposition, and him saying things about the stimulus and his administration saying things about the stimulus at the time about how many new jobs it would ask and how unemployment would stay below 8% within a year and all these promises that he made. The terrifying thing about him making all those bold guarantees is it suggests that the administration actually believes that these policies were going to help, you know, help improve things. And that to me is scarier than if they were simply just, you know, handing out goodies to their pet constituencies, which is what a lot of us thought about the stimulus. Now, the two aren't mutually exclusive, of course, but anyway, that always freaked me out. The other thing is that listening to this ad kind of makes me sad, because I think it's a very effective ad, and it just reminds me that it should be a slam dunk. I mean, this should be 1980. We should be in 1980 right now, but I'm worried increasingly that we're in 1936, that you're going to end up with Obama winning re-election and in a sense ratifying the last 4 years of his presidency, or at least that's the way he will take a victory. So you know, we should have an articulate conservative guy with serious policies and a serious general election threat against the president, whereas what we actually have is kind of a mess of a primary where one guy's got some of those ingredients and the other guy's got some other of those ingredients, but we're not yet really sure that any of them can put it all together and win.
You mentioned, Dan, the latest back and forth between the Republican hopefuls. Yet another debate Monday night in Florida this time, because, of course, they haven't been on the same stage at all recently, and we really don't understand the differences between them. But for some reason, NBC decided to put this in prime time and really suck the oxygen out of the room by telling people they couldn't clap. Newt is now promising to potentially boycott future debates if people can't cheer, which I think is a bit extreme. But to not have any audience reaction was kind of like listening to a lecture at a library a lot of times, except for our martini number two. And here is just a snippet of what was a pretty common theme last night between Romney and Gingrich sniping back and forth. Romney going after Newt's time as a consultant for Freddie Mac just before the housing collapse, and Newt firing back, of course, about Bain. That's a consistent theme he's had over the past couple of weeks. Just take a listen to this and see if you think this is actually helping the cause.
And you said it was 300,000. It was 1.6 million. So Matt, that's a difference.
Matt, what's the gross revenue of Bain in the years you were associated with it? What's the gross revenue?
Very substantial, but I think it's irrelevant compared to the fact that you were working for Freddie Mac.
Wait a second.
You were
working for substantial. Did Bain ever do any work with any company which did any work with the government, like Medicare?
We didn't do any work with the government. I didn't have an office in K Street.
It was just in the last debate on CNN, Dan, where they were asked at the very end of the debate, if you could do anything differently, what would you do? And Mitt Romney's answer was, I'd focus less on my opponents in the primary and more on President Obama because ultimately he's the one that needs to be defeated. Part of this was teed up by the questions from NBC, but a lot of this was Romney, I think, feeling a little bit desperate. He doesn't look good in the attack dog role. At least he's not comfortable with it. Gingrich certainly is ready to mix it up. And in the end, you know, Jim and I just talked yesterday about how our nominee would be battle tested, which could be a good thing. After watching more of that in the debate last night, it just looks like, you know, rolling around in the mud and completely keeping our eye off the ball.
Yeah, I think in general, in keeping with the theme of my last answer, that the primary has been net bad for whoever ends up being the nominee. I think it's damage has been done. The worst has been brought out in both Romney and Gingrich. I don't think it's fatal, but yeah, it's certainly not good. The thing that I have to kind of give NBC credit for is Brian Williams and crew were trying to think of a way to diffuse the Gingrich bomb, to diffuse it from being about the media. And here's one time where I will side with the mainstream news media. I think it would be the height of stupidity for conservatives to select a candidate based on how good he is at beating up the news media. I mean, it's very satisfying. We enjoy it. I think Gingrich's moments with the media and these debates, barring the last one, which was so clearly scripted, have been refreshing, bracing, tonics. But it would be just idiotic, and I use that strong language, if that's the reason why he wins out over Romney. There are plenty of reasons not to like Romney. Newt's been able to bring out some of them. He's been able to make Romney look really bad. He's penetrated on the electability argument, which I didn't think anyone could do. He's made Romney look, you know, shaky on electability. But I have to kind of give NBC credit for saying, we're going to deny you the oxygen to make this about us. This is going to be about you and Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. And I'm going to say it. I kind of agree with him on that.
The other candidates were kind of like just showpieces last night. Basically, Brian Williams asking them, you really can't win. So Ron Paul, you're going to run as a third party. Rick Santorum, essentially, why are you still in this thing? You couldn't win re-election in Pennsylvania. So it was kind of obvious, though, that how they were trying to pitch the battle last night at the debate in Florida. But, you know, we have an event tonight, Dan, called the State of the Union Address. We mentioned it a moment ago in the RNC's pre-buttle to the president's address. And President Reagan, who we both adore, of course, instituted a new practice in 1982 that pretty much every year since then, whoever the president is has followed. And that was his State of the Union Address came right after a horrific plane crash in the Washington area. And there were heroes who pulled people out of the icy Potomac River, first responders, people just on their commute. And the president picked a couple of those folks, had them sit with the first lady in the gallery. They got a rousing round of applause when the president talked about how they are the picture of America, you know, just doing what's necessary to make America a better place. Bill Clinton kind of changed that in the 1990s by basically trotting in people who agreed with his policies. And now we're getting it in an even more disgusting way tonight, because I'm sure everybody knows who Debbie Bosanek is. I'm sure you don't. And that's because she is Warren Buffett's secretary, the famed secretary who pays more in taxes than Warren Buffett. So the president, of course, going with his class warfare shtick, she's going to be the poster child for this. And I'm guessing, Dan, Warren Buffett's secretary is probably pretty rich. And I don't think she's exactly scrounging on food stamps, although if she is, she's in good company since the president took office. But this is just more complete pandering here. And I think, at least I hope, most people are turned off by it.
Well, every time they trot this poor woman out, I think to myself, you know, I heard that she makes 60 grand, which is certainly not a bad living, even in the United States. And it's probably pretty good out in Omaha, where the cost of living is much lower than it is here in the Big Apple. But every time they trot this woman out there, I think to myself, you know, Warren could just give her a raise instead of complaining about how she pays more in taxes than he does. Here's an idea: pay her in Berkshire Hathaway options, then she can pay the Mitt Romney rate and the Warren Buffett rate. I don't understand it. It really is the complete and total degradation of that symbolic spot up there with the first lady. And not to say this woman's a bad woman, I'm sure she does a fine job, but you know, the conservatives, the Republican president would put Buffett up there, because not only does Buffett employ this woman, he helps ensure that thousands, tens of thousands of people are employed, and he has noxious political beliefs, and I think he's been really unhelpful in defending the productive class in America. But you know what? He's every bit as much a hero as this woman is for doing her job well, because he does his job well. And by doing his job well, tens of thousands of people have jobs too.
That's exactly right. And who knows who else will be in the box. But if you are expecting the president to build bridges instead of tearing them down to steal some of his rhetoric, don't get your hopes up, because as we all know, he's got nothing to run on but division. So, Dan, get the popcorn ready. Get the bingo cards ready. I don't know if you're going to be doing any shots to drinking any martinis to different catchphrases tonight. But if you've got those ready, I think it's going to be a pretty rough morning for you tomorrow.
Warm milk. No shots. Just warm milk. That's all.
Dan, have a great day. Thanks for filling in. We'll talk to you later.
No problem, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online filling in for Jim Garrity. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today, and join us again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.